Let's go ahead and do verse 17. One more time.
Yes, Swat.
Yeah. Yes, Twat, Maratire, Vasyat. Try it again.
Yes, Twat,
Maratire, Vasyat. Yes, Twat, Maratire, Vasyat.
Atmatrittascha
manavaha.
Atmanyeva
cha santushtaha.
Tasya karyam na vidyate.
Tasya karyam na vidyate. So. Yaha tu atma. Atma ratihi, eva syat, atma trittaha cha manavaha, atmani eva cha santushtaha, tasya karyam navidyate. So here, Shankara has actually a whole paragraph of introduction here. Let me just translate the verse to make sense of what he has to say here. He says, the verse, Krishna is saying, he who yaha, whereas the one who, atma ratihi eva, the one who is reveling in the self, the atma alone, syat, the one who is, you can use that as like a definite, or the one who would be, or the one who definitely is just reveling in the atma, in the self alone, atma triptascha, and enjoying the self, the manavaha, yaha manavaha, which person is just reveling in the self alone, enjoying the self alone. Atmani eva cha santushtaha, and satisfied in the self alone. For that person, karyam na vidyate. For that person, there is nothing to be done. Okay? Because these last few verses, we're talking about having to participate to do all of the niyatam karmas. But especially from the Hindu standpoint, there are so many rituals that are enjoined on a person to do in order to really participate in the creation, to have that kind of prasada buddhi toward all of the things that Bhagavan or that all of the elements are providing for you. You also give back with some gratitude, some thanks, and certain rituals that are enjoined. And also for a mumukshu, just that prasada buddhi, taking all of the actions that you're doing are like a puja to Bhagavan, and then all that's coming back from those actions, all the karma pala, are received as prasad, that prasada buddhi. But the question is this also true for a jnani, someone who has that jnana nishtha, who is very clear and firm in their knowledge? So here, this is for the one who is really clear, whose mind is simply reveling and satisfied in the Atma alone, for that person, there is nothing to be done. And so here we have to look at something also, the tradition, the Hindu tradition, or the Vedic, I'd better say Vedic tradition. The sannyasa, the ritual of sannyasa, remember I was talking a little bit about it in terms of knowledge. There's vividisha sannyasa, and there's vidvat sannyasa. The sannyasa is given to the student once either their guru feels that, you know, they're ready to do that, to take sannyasa and just apply themselves to study, living by themselves basically, or living in an ashram without really any other expression except for studying, contemplating, being with this knowledge, going to temple, all of the things that we do in an ashram in order to gain this knowledge or in that guru-sisha relationship. So then that person's mind is just ready for that. There is no other real raga dvesha. There's no really other impetus there or motivation. Let me have this and I'd like to do this too. I want to study, definitely, but I have all these other things that I kind of like to do. And I have, you know, different pressures inside you know, that make me react to given situations. So I don't have enough really of a shantavritti to just happily stay in an ashram or stay with my teacher and only study. And so in that case, I wouldn't take this vividisha sannyasa. The vividisha sannyasa means for the one who wants to study, is ready to study and to actually do nothing else, right? So that's plenty for me. I don't have any other pravrittis, any other inclinations or anything else pressuring me. I just want to be with this teaching. And of course, that's what Arjuna thought too. But his teacher didn't agree. No, karma yoga is good for you. And he explained it to him in so many ways. So your teacher, if say you wanted to take vividisha sannyasa, you just feel ready. You just want to take sannyasa and lead a life that's only centered around that. Then that vividisha sannyasa will be given. But sannyasa is sannyasa. Just to just remind you, as opposed to the vidvat sannyasa, where a person does have jnana nishtha, is very firmly rooted in their knowledge. There's no vagueness, there's no doubt. That person, I am with myself. I am, my ananda is from myself. I am the source of the ananda, and I don't think anything else is a source of it. I stay with myself, and I just simply do what is to be done. That's jnana nishtha, where rootedness in my knowledge. So for that person, they took sannyasa, the vividisha person, one who wants to study, took sannyasa. The sannyasa it's a vow, it's a ritual. And in that ritual, you are released from all of your duties. You no longer would, in fact, you're absolutely not expected to do those. Those duties are not yours anymore. You're now in a different ashrama. You're in the sannyasa ashrama, where those duties are not applicable to you anymore. And in fact, no duties are applicable to you other than just being with yourself as a vividisha sannyasi, studying, gaining this knowledge, contemplating. And for a vidvat sannyasa, what do? They stay with their knowledge, they contemplate, they teach. And that's what they do. That's it. They don't have any desire, and it's fine. They don't think, oh, I'm not, now that I've taken sannyasa, I'm not able to do these things. That's the worry. That's exactly what Krishna's worry is, because Arjuna is a warrior, and he can't just go from being a warrior to being a sannyasi. He's not ready for that. Now, he still has a lot of rage and a lot of anger. A lot of things have happened to him those last 12 years, and coming up with Duryodhana, there's just a lot of, he said to confront a huge amount of very aggressive adharma for many, many years, you know, and then taking a dharmic position to that aggressive adharma, you kind of feel like sometimes like, wow, I'm really getting the short end of this, other than the shanti that it brings me. But in terms of the world, it really can be very infuriating. And in fact, Arjuna and his brothers sometimes were furious at to find themselves in this situation. So how to handle all of that rage and anger and fury and, you know, and also that kshatriya, you know, energy by taking sannyasa? No. It's by gaining knowledge, just like the sannyasi has to do. Both have to gain knowledge. Whether you've taken sannyasa or where you're in the world as a karma yogi, you still have to gain that knowledge that will result in the same thing for both. Same thing for both. But it's up to the guru, the teacher, to decide, you know, which way is the most efficacious for you. Which way will allow your mind to mature for that karma yoga buddhi, that prasada buddhi, to become natural for you? What is the best way to go? It's almost like saying, if the karma yoga buddhi is already natural for you, then take the sannyasa so you can just study and you don't have to do all of these other things. If that prasada buddhi is not already natural for you, it's better to stay in the world. You know, do all of the rituals, get the rubs from all of the people that are creating this reaction or that reaction. Stay with it, with that prasada buddhi, so you can do that work, you know. And then all of the pressures and all of the desires, you can fulfill those things. You're not ready just to sit in a contemplative environment. In fact, I told you the other day, when people take that type of lifestyle, even going to the 3-year course, which is time limited, you can spend a lot of time sleeping, yeah, because it's too much. You know, it's too much to just be with that knowledge all of the time, and all of the pressure and all of the things that are coming up. you know, and there's no, there's kind of nowhere to go to distract yourself and all this kind of stuff. So it gets kind of overwhelming. And you get flooded with things, and then you're with exactly the same people all of the time, and after 6 months, it's kind of, everybody's everybody's having their little problems with the whole thing. So, you know, and that's only for 3 years. So, Krishna says, Swamiji always says, you know, once he said, this is about talking about these three-year courses and the ashram life, he said, the biggest obstacle to gaining knowledge is the ashram. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make that what you want to do with that. But I think it's because, you know, and Swamiji, just a little aside, because I think it's kind of important. Swamiji, in a way, he was able to handle the ashram, living in an ashram, but with all of the students for 3 years, you know, with such a kind of a rigorous schedule for Swamiji. When Swamiji was doing it, there was also a very rigorous schedule. But in order for that to work for all of the people in the ashram, it has to be one-on-one. In spite of a whole group being there, the needs of, what are the needs of each individual person? And so it simply can't work for a three-year period where it's 24/7, where it's all cookie-cutter, nobody can do this, because if one person can do this and we don't let other people do it, then that's not fair. And so that means that's not one-on-one. That means we all have to march to the same drummer, even though we're marching at all different rates. Just imagine what that would look like. Say you were a band, you know, in a football game at the halftime. There's a band, and they're all marching at the same time. Their feet are all going up exactly the same. They're all marching exactly to the same drummer. Now, what if none of them were marching to the same drummer? What would that look like? It would be wild. It would be India. That's how India is. It would be wild. But for India, they're all going along, marching along, and doing this and doing that and talking along the way, you know? But they're marching, they're talking to each other, you know, stepping over to the side and all this kind of stuff. It's just like when we do, in India, if we do a ritual, a beautiful ritual, many, many people are there, the ritual is taking place, you know? And people are sitting, and then they're getting up and going and walking around and decide to take a little break, and the kids come and run in and all of that. That's how it is. There's something very, very beautiful like that, you know. And in the ashram there with Swamiji, who is Swamiji, he has that quality of keeping everybody, because of his love, I think, everybody kind of on track, you know, everybody coming to classes, everybody going to the puja most of the time, everybody doing all of these things, you know. Even when they're really tired, they still drag themselves at night to satsang at 8 o'clock at night after they got up at 5 in the morning. And the satsang sometimes taking till 10 at night. They're exhausted. But, you know, after all, Swamiji's giving the satsang. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's good. That's enough reason to go, even though you're exhausted. But that's because one-on-one, personal relationship, so much love, so much care, then you just want to be with him. And so he was able to do that. And that kind of mitigated the ashram being the major obstacle, you know, to you really being able to grow and get this knowledge. Because he didn't make everyone march in step, because people don't march in step. Creates way too much pressure over the long term, way too much pressure for individuals who are going a little different pace. And so somehow he was able to manage all of that and keep the course together. It's just amazing, very beautiful thing. So we have to, each one of us has to march at our own step, at our own pace. Normally in life we can do that, you know. Keep doing the shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Stay in the world until it's not a problem for you. With that karma yoga buddhi, with that prasada buddhi. So everything that all of your desires, all of the desires themselves are non-binding desires, preferences. You know? So your shanti isn't at stake. Your shanti isn't at risk. You know? that itself takes a lot of, it's a lot of work, you know, because you go out of the class, you go out and, you know, doing whatever you're doing with your friends and whatnot. And all of your likes and dislikes come up, the agitations around those likes and dislikes. And you have to do that work. You have to be alert. Right? Swamiji tells everybody at the end, I really worked hard. Don't think that I have this just for nothing, as though it was a free ride. It's not a free ride. You know? You have to want it. You have to want it in terms of the antakarana shuddhi. That's work. That means when these raga dveshas come up, or I don't like this person, or I don't like this, but I sit with that, work on it, understand it in the light of my knowledge, do the inner child work, have a conversation with that person imaginally, all of these kind of things. I have to have a commitment to it. So it's why when we're not here together, like we get to be together for 30 days, but when we're not together, then I need some sort of practice on my own to be able to bring, you know, all of this work to the forefront. But say I've done all of that, and my mind, it does have a shantavritti, as just my natural mind, and I don't need anything to make me happy, because my mind isn't running away from me, from my own being. So that mind, I'm reveling in myself. That mind can, if they're given sannyasa, nothing happens. Given sannyasa means you're absolved of all rituals. You've done all of those rituals and all of that karma yoga for this. This is, you've done it for this, now you have this. Now there's no purpose at all to do these rituals or to have a prasada buddhi. Because when don't you have a prasada buddhi? Actually, the prasada buddhi is so absolutely natural to you when these raga dveshas are not there. I mean, this binding raga dveshas. Otherwise, the prasada buddhi, that's the very nature of yourself, you know? And so that blessing is always there. And so why would there be any rituals for me to do unless I just enjoy doing rituals? And I enjoy chanting, then I'll chant. If I like to do some rituals, I'll do some rituals. But there's nothing binding there. There's absolutely no reason to do it, except that's my karma, that's my personality, I enjoy doing it, you know? But in India, it's not that way that it's about enjoying doing it. That's wonderful if you enjoy doing it, but it's your duty to do it, you know? And your duty to say prayers before you eat, and your duty to as a human being, just as a human being, to do dharma. That's your role in this creation. That's what Bhagavan expects of you. That's what the creation, if I say Bhagavan expects of you, that's what the laws of the creation expect of you, you know? And you're not really liberated from that until you are Ishwara. And the Jnani is Ishwara. There is no ahankara there. There's no ahankara that has to be, you know, chiseled away or, you know, weakened or, dispelled. And that's already happened. So now the self is Ishwara, the body is Ishwara, the universe is Ishwara. I am Ishwara. That's the very Ishwara, the very one from whom these Vedas have come. And so for such a person who just enjoys the self in the self, enjoys the mind, I depend only upon the Atma for the Ananda, knowing full well that there is no other Ananda. Right? It's not like, oh, these other people get to depend on all these other kinds of Anandas. There is no other kind of Ananda. There's only one Ananda. And that one Ananda shines through the variety of shantavrittis that we're able to engender. But the source of the Ananda is only one. So the Jnani is not giving up all of these multiple, you know, stations of Ananda. There are no multiple stations of Ananda. There's only one Satchit Ananda, which is my being. It's just the mind has discovered it. And so it doesn't no longer goes around the circuitous route, you know. Let me fulfill this desire so that I can have a shantavritti, so I can experience a moment of happiness. That circuitous route is gone. Now, I am the Ananda, and my mind just stays home with me. Why would it do anything else? To do anything else, it has to somehow project the Ananda out there, and it'll let me go out there and get it. Yeah, but it's not out there. Well, I know it's not out there. Why should I go out there to get it? There's no reason to go out there to get it. If you have something to do, do it. But it's not for the ananda. I am the ananda. So that's the situation for Ajnani. But then, let's do this next verse.
Naiva tasya krite narattaha. Na krite neha kaschana. Na chasya sarva bhuteshu. Kaschit artavya pashrayaha.
Na eva tasya kritena artaha. Na akritena iha kaschana. Na cha asya sarvabhuteshu kaschit arta vipashrayaha. Again about the jnani. For him, for that one, asya, for that person who has this jnana nishta, you know, this stitta pregna, just remembering all of these words that I'm just checking, all these nice words that Arjuna used. Remember in verse 54, the second chapter, Arjuna goes, stitta pregnyasya ka bhasha samadhistasya keshava stitta dihi kim prabhasheta kimasita vrajeta kim. Arjuna says, you know, what is the description of a stitta pregna? One whose knowledge is firm. It means there's no wavering. One who is samadhistaha. One who just abides there in that samadhihi. Samadhi means the mind is just with myself. It just naturally is with myself. Then also stittadihi, and the one whose knowledge is very firm. This is the brahmanishta. These are all different words for brahmanishta. The one whose commitment, whose mind is just naturally committed to the self, is Brahman, to Ishwara. It's a natural commitment. You know, it's not like I am committed to Brahman. It's that is what any mind that knew Brahman would be doing. Because of the Satchitananda, because that is the nature of myself that I've always tried to rescue out of the world. I've always tried to find myself in the world somehow and bring myself back. But when I find myself, I'm so happy just to be at home, to stay at home, because I know myself. Right? It's not projected out. So for that brahmanishta, he said, for such a person, na eva tasya kritena artaha, tasya for him, for that person, there is artaha, na artaha, there is no purpose or no reason or no concern with doing a karma. There's nothing for me to get out of it. I don't have any purpose or any reason to do any particular karma. Nor do I have any reason at all. This kaschana means not at all. There's no reason at all, no purpose, nothing to be gained from not doing a karma. So my reason for doing a karma or not doing a karma has nothing to do with some purpose or some gain that I'm supposed to get out of that. And so why then would I would do it then? But also he says, one more line, he says, and for such a person, kaschit arta vipashreha, there is no dependence at all on any type of an object or on any being. So I'm not dependent on a thing, nor on all of the beings I have no dependence whatsoever. So why would that be? It's because yourself is the very being which is the adhishtan of the entire creation. It's the self of all beings. And it itself is not an object. You yourself are not an object, you know, to have any type of exchange with anybody. You're the self of all beings. And so, if you are the self of all beings, and if you are the self of Ishwara, and that is where your mind is abiding, then what and who are you going to be depending on for anything? There's nothing there except yourself, right? And so this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishwara, to this creation, but Ishwara, the whole Ishwara, and every being in the creation has your being for itself. And so what am I going to get out of doing karma? So Shankara says, it is just like going, like in the previous verse, just like, you know, trudging into the middle of the well, which is underwater, which has gone underwater because of the flood. Why would it even cross my mind to do that? And why would, if I am the Ananda which I seek, why would it cross my mind to do this or that in order to become happy? So then the question is, well, if I don't need to do this or that or not do this or not do that in order to become happy, why then do I do anything at all? You know? Why do anything at all? Because of the prarabdha karma. This body, mind, sense organs, you have to start looking like this. This body, mind, sense organs is like a cell in the body. What if the cell in the body said, oh, now that I have knowledge, we're not doing anything. We're not going to do anything, you know? But you are part of your prarabdha karma. And the prarabdha karma, Ishwara, you are part of Ishwara. And you're a player in the particular prarabdha karma, the karmas that you find yourself in, right? You're not just there as a statue or a stone. You're a player in your karma. And certain things are just naturally expected of you. You have so many duties that you probably don't think of them as duties until you decide that you don't want to do them, right? If you were to decide, you know, I really don't want to do that, then your mind will go, yeah, but I kind of have to. You know, or you'll start feeling really torn because I want to do something else, but I know I need to do that. But I really want to do that other thing. Yeah, but I'll feel horrible if I do that other thing because this is my duty. Nobody's telling you it's the duty in the States. We just all know that it is. We don't use that language. But you know what's expected of you, and you may try to get away from it, but your psyche doesn't do that very well, you know. And say, I have no reason. So now getting back. So the Ajnani, the Samsari, it has these kind of conflicts. This is my duty, but I want to do this. I have a raga dvesha. I have a raga here. I have a duty here. This raga is really strong, and this duty is in my way, in the way of this raga. So I have a conflict. But what's the conflict for Ajnani? Because to me, it doesn't matter whether I do this or I do that. It doesn't make any difference at all. It doesn't matter if I do it, if I don't do it. Nothing's going to happen to me one way or the other because they don't have the capacity to feed into my ananda. And they're just little wells. They don't have anything to do with the ananda of my own being. And so then the question is, since I'm alive, since this is my prarabdha karma, this is what's being asked of me at the moment, why wouldn't I do it? For what reason would I not do it, really? Because it's there to be done and it's my part in the play. And so I just naturally do it because I don't lose anything from doing it or not doing it. That's what's being asked of me, and so I do it. That's just that natural for the jnani, that Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. Everything is Ishwara. This is my part in the situation, and this is what I do. I don't have to think much about it. Dharma is what is a natural expression for jnani. And for the mumukshu, it's slightly different. For the mumukshu, my mind is kind of in training, you know? It has the training wheels, in a sense, of having to neutralize these raga dveshas. That's why we have this karma yoga, why we have this prasada buddhi. Because if something is a binding desire for me, you know, for a mumukshu, then that binding desire I have, that becomes a sadhana for me. A binding desire or a non-binding desire for a mumukshu is never going to trump dharma. If the binding desire is within dharma, you know, then there's a certain okayness. Okay, it's within dharma, you want to do it, You have a raga for it. It's kind of a binding desire. You're a mumukshu, but you still have these binding desires coming up. But it's within dharma. You want to do it. You do it with prasada buddhi. You do it with that prasada buddhi. Because that prasada buddhi helps to neutralize these raga dveshas. My mind has not yet had enough time to mature in my knowledge. And so these raga dveshas, these likes and dislikes, I need this to be happy, I have to get rid of that to be happy, they still come up and they still create pressure. So what should we do? Well, definitely we shouldn't take sannyasa. Definitely we should stay, according to Bhagavan, stay in this situation and work through those things, go ahead and fulfill those desires, but accept the results of your actions with that prasada buddhi. And with that, there you become less and less attached to the fulfillment of the desire. It starts, desires themselves start transforming from a binding desire, I need this to be happy, to a non-binding desire where my ananda doesn't depend upon it. And it gets, that transformation takes place really because of experience. The experience of my mind, the mind that has a prasada buddhi, the mind that has a prasada buddhi that takes the whole thing, you know, for as prasad from Bhagavan, gains actually a deeper ananda than what you get from the little fulfillments of pleasure in the world. There's really no comparison. And so your mind always goes after the maximum ananda. It's just what it does. It's not going to say, this would make me really happy, this would make me a little bit happy, I'll go over the little bit happy. It doesn't do that. But the thing is that as you gain knowledge, you start to really understand what gives the most ananda. And dharma, by far, prasada buddhi by far gives the most shanti, the most feeling of being part of the creation, the most feeling of being totally in resonance with Bhagavan, you know, be loved by Bhagavan, be part of Bhagavan, be non-isolated from Bhagavan, because you are with that prasada buddhi, you are totally included in that. That's that. Those niyata karmas where really I'm that we were just talking about earlier, that continual expression of gratitude in relationship with the creation. And so I become, it's kind of like Bhagavan becomes my closest friend. I have so many friends, so many people that I love, so many family members, so many animals that I love, and all of these things that are so precious, you know. Even with non-binding desire, there's so many people that you care about and love. When Swamiji said, "All my students are like golden chains." Yeah, so because he can't leave them, you know. Non-binding desire, but he won't leave you. He'll never leave you. They're like golden. They're all like golden chains. I accept those golden chains. Yeah. But anyway, that participatory, you know, being so much participating with Ishwara, being part of Ishwara, that prasada buddhi, everything is a conversation. So everything becomes a conversation with Bhagavan. Everything that's happening, you know, your mind starts to appreciate the way the world is going, the way your prarabdha is going, the way things are unfolding. When you don't know what to do or how something should be, just, well, let's see what Bhagavan does. How many jnanis say that? Let's just see what Bhagavan does. Let's see how he handles this situation. I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea. Well, let's see what Bhagavan does. That is such a beautiful thing to be able to say and really mean it, you know. And then to kind of enjoy seeing what happens, you know. And then, when you say, I have no idea what to do. for somebody like me, I have no idea what to do, and I'm going to have to make up my mind and have to figure out what I'm going to do. I have no idea, you know. But the truth of it is, yeah, you have no idea. That's true. And that's worrying about it is not going to make you have an idea. It's like, I have no idea. Buggle now. No, that's not necessarily, you know, going to make you come up with an idea. So instead, what you start saying, yeah, I have no idea, knowing that it's not time to have the idea. It's just not time to know. You know, when it's time to know, then you'll know. Yeah, and then you can happily wait. You know, and you'll be happy. Yeah, I don't know. It's not time to know. When it's time to know, I will know, and that should be absolutely fine. It just slows everything down to Bhagavan's time. The problem we have is that we know we're going to have to know. Because I don't know right now, and if we just keep going on like that, I'm going to have to know at some point. Now, am I going to know at that point? Yeah. But say you have experience. You have experience with your life, and you start realizing, well, let's see, I really don't know. Let's see what Bhagavan does. And it gives you the patience to watch Bhagavan at work. And then you start to love to watch Bhagavan at work and see how he does things. See how the creation does things. Because everyone is in your prarabdha karma, everyone is equally included in that prarabdha karma. So there's many things that have to fit together. Many, for any decision, for any movement, many, many, many things have to come into place. And sometimes you're just thinking of yourself. I'm in place. Forget about everybody else. But I'm part of everybody else. There's no forgetting about everybody else. We're all in it together. This prarabdha, this is us, you know. We're that stream of prarabdha. We're in here together. And so if there's movement and change and all of that, that involves everybody. And so you just, you know, enjoy. Enjoy Ishwara. So that's such a beautiful thing. And somebody, person who has that, as you discover this, as you go along, as you get that prasada buddhi, you go on discovering, you know, and you go on trusting more and more and more as you discover and enjoy more and more and more. And so such a person, for them, for jnani, it is not about being concerned over whether I should do this or I shouldn't do that. It's not really even an issue because there's nothing at stake. You know, I am the self that is the self of Ishwara. This body, mind, sense, organs belongs to Ishwara. So let's just see what happens. And I do whatever I spontaneously do in the moment, which is my duty. Because it's not bound by raga dvesha. Then what is it bound by? It's bound by my prarabdha karma and my duty and what needs to be done. A jnani is a dharmi. A jnani, somebody who has self-knowledge, cannot do an adharma. The adharma is going to comes out of pain. You know, that comes out of raga dvesha. It comes out of pain. If even an ajnani, let them try to do an adharma when they're happy, when they're whole, when they're complete. That's when the mind is generous and good and loving. Then something has to tick them off somehow. And then their mind is full of anger and all of that, and rawr, then I can do all kinds of things. But when your mind has that shanti and that ananda, then it is acting out and giving out of that. So for jnani, where the whole thing is Ishwara, there isn't even any me other than the me, the self that is Bhagavan, there isn't any impetus for that type of acting out. So that's for Ajnani, these two verses. But then let's do the next verse.
Tasma asakta satatam
karya karma samachara
asakto hyacharan karma
paramapnoti purushaha
tasmat asaktah satatam karyam karma samachara. Asaktah hi acharan karma param apnoti purushah. So in Shankara makes a little his connection to this verse. So he says, as Krishna say to Arjuna, you're not quite there yet. You know, you're not like the one who's abiding in the flood, who's standing in the flood. The flood hasn't happened yet. You have to go out to the well, more or less. Okay, so you're not quite there yet. You're not existing in that samyak darshana, in that clear vision. Not yet. You're not abiding in that clear vision, like the jnani is abiding in the clear vision, likened to the jnani who's abiding in the flood, sitting in the flood, overwhelmed by the flood, and not going to, traipse out to the well. But you're not abiding in that vision yet. You're just starting, because he just started teaching Arjuna. And Arjuna's in the middle of this war, so he's not really ready yet. He hasn't had time to really let his mind totally, own up this knowledge. And so he says, because of that, he says, tasmat, therefore, asaktaha, being one who has non-binding desires. Remember the sangha? It means attachment. Asanga or asakta means there's no attachment. No attachment means the desires I have are non-binding. I don't have the self, this projection of myself on them, to the extent that I think if I don't do this, I won't be happy. I need this to be happy. That's a binding desire. I want this, but I don't need it. That's a non-binding desire. That's asaktaha. So be, therefore, as an asaktaha, not giving up these binding desires, being one who has non-binding desires, samachara. Satatam, always, always, samachara. May you do, and the samachara, may you do. The sam means may you do it well. May you do it well. What? The karmas that are to be done, karyam karma. May you do well, do them well. Those karmas that are your duties, the karmas that are to be done. You remember when Swamiji says, when asked, I just do what is in front of me. I do what there is there to be done, what is in front of me. And then he says, to the best of my ability. That's the sama, samachara. I do what is to be done as best that I can, to the best of my ability. And that's it. That's life. Very simple. Every moment, you just do what there's to be done because the Bhagavan is continually keeping you busy. So you just do that and do it well. Do it to the best of your ability. Satatam. Just always do that. Having non-binding desires, being an asaktaha. And then he says, asaktaha hi acharan karma param apnoti purushaha. He says he, because being an asaktaha, having one who has these non-binding desires, acharan, doing, and the ah there again, ah is the same as the sam, doing it well, doing your karma, doing those karmas, as an asaktaha, doing those karmas, parama apnoti purushaha. A person gains param, gains moksha. Param is here as moksha. So doing, because for the mumukshu, what you want is moksha. You have a teacher. You are gaining knowledge that shravana manana nidhyasana. You are clearly gaining the knowledge. Your mind is ready enough for it, or you wouldn't be with the teacher. So all of these, the adhikari, the qualities for the adhikari, the qualified student, the sadhana chatushtya, all of those are there in enough measure. They're not there fully, They're there in enough measure to be an adhikari, to be somebody who this knowledge is meaningful to. So all of those things are there. You have viveka. You won't have, until you have self-knowledge, you won't have complete viveka. Viveka means nitya, nitya, vastu, viveka. That means that viveka, that discrimination between what is timeless and what is time-bound. Until you have knowledge, you don't have no idea what is timeless. There's nothing timeless in the creation, so how would you know? But you know that everything in the creation is time-bound. That you know. And you know that if everything in the creation is time-bound, then you gain some vairagya, because how can that give me the wholeness that I'm seeking to be, the person that I believe myself to be, that I should be, the one who is whole and complete? I don't want just little glimpses of being whole and complete. Mm-hmm. I want to just be myself. I want to be whole and complete, you know, not little tastes of it all the time. And so that vairagya you will have to some degree, some more than others. The shama, dhamma, upadati, all of these little qualities, says also, do you have them relatively? Not, you have mumukshutvam, the desire to be liberation, to be liberated, to gain, to be liberated. That desire to be liberated changes into jignasa, the desire to know. Definitely you have to have that. You have to realize that this world, because of its nature, is not capable of giving me what I seek. If I don't realize that, then I still have a way out. If I could just have that. Or if I could just go to Swargaloka. Or if I could astral travel. If I could, read minds. If I could do something. If I had all the siddhis. If I could travel around just by my mind. Then everything would be fine. Okay, you have a ways to go. Not going to work. But what about when you recognize, Then you're a mumukshu. Then you're ready for this knowledge. But then, so you're ready for the shravana, manana, nididhyasana, and that starts to take place, and you start to gain this knowledge. But at the same time, as you're gaining this knowledge, and from the knowledge itself, just from the knowledge itself, that antakarna shuddhi begins to take place. It's not that the knowledge doesn't give antakarna shuddhi, that purity of mind. It does give it. Just not enough. It changes. The more you know, the more the mind will change. But then, with that karma yoga buddhi, that upayanishta, the antakarna shuddhi, that the mind needs to really know this completely for the mind to own it up, so that the qualities of the mind, this is the thing, so that the qualities of my mind are natural to myself. Right? As opposed to the qualities of my mind being natural to irritation and to anger or to sadness or to depression or to whatever the spectrum of emotions that can overwhelm the buddhi, those negative qualities are natural to that spectrum of the negative spectrum of emotions, of hatred, of bitterness, of jealousy, of envy. Then we're getting kind of the darker side, as opposed to just agitation and irritation and anger and frustration and all of these. I'm always speaking out of these, feeling out of these, So then my mind is not just being myself. Right? It's not speaking out of myself. It's not feeling out of myself. It's not acting out of myself. It's acting out of these emotions. Right? Naturally, that karma yoga, that prasada buddhi starts to release me from raga dvesha, from my likes, from my binding desires, which is what generates these emotions. The raga dvesha, remember the verse we had some time ago, that your raga, your kama means desire. Desire means raga dvesha. It's twofold, the kama. Kama thwarted leads to or transforms itself into krodha, into anger, And then anger transforms itself into delusion, etc., until you destroy your buddhi. It takes it all the way down to absolute destruction. Okay, but it starts with kama, thwarted, transforms itself into krodha. And krodha really stands anger. It really stands for the whole spectrum, the negative spectrum. all of that negative spectrum starts with, you know, binding desires. I need this to be happy. I need this to be happy translates into the ananda, which really is myself, but I have no idea where it's hiding, you know, is out there. I am out there. You won't say it like that because you don't realize it like that, but that's what it is. I am out there, or somebody's got me. Somebody's got me and they're running away with me, you know. I have to get them, you know. Or this person's trying to steal me. My being. It's my being. That's why this is so intense. You know, that's why samsara is so intense. That's why your raga dveshas are so intense. Because your being gets projected out on just and lands on something just because of self-ignorance. So all of this from beginningless time, all of these, you know, of course, these raga dveshas and all of these different situations, all that has to be neutralized. You know? But it has to be neutralized by my knowledge, but also I give the mind some tools, you know, to help it to settle down. And that the best tool in the world is that, you know, prasada buddhi. Because with the prasada buddhi, it's right in line with everything I'm learning. It's not apart from what I'm learning, but it's applied. It's applied. It's if everything is Bhagavan, if I'm the ananda, you know, then let me do these, go after these desires, or if I have them, but accept the results as prasad. Because with the prasad, for those who have been to the temple, when the prasad comes from the pujari after the puja's been done, the prasad itself, that it's prasad, no matter what it is, that prasad is a blessing, you know? And so if I take everything that comes my way as a blessing, then I gain a shanti in my mind. And so that practice starts to liberate me from these raga dveshas, because that attitude itself gives me a lasting shanti. Right? And so, but then I have to be alert, because my mind, initially, we talk about it in class, we understand it also, but then I go into town or whatever, and all of a sudden my mind's just behaving. I'm getting irritated about this and thinking about that, you know, all of these things. That's where what Swamiji means, right? You know, I worked hard. Because you have to be alert. It has to be important to you. That's why spending time contemplating in the morning, so, you know, doing that inner work, so that it is important. Because if it is important to me, then I can keep doing it and my mind changes actually really quickly. But I can easily not do it. And just out of unconsciousness. So I'm just saying, because of not being alert, you know? And so we can go on not being alert. The only problem is, and it doesn't need to be a problem, you can gain knowledge, you recognize yourself, your being is always free, and illumining a mind that is acting like an ajnani. You know? And that goes on for quite some time in this way or that way. And you don't really care because yourself is always there in exactly the same way. You have that viveka between your own being and whatever the mind is doing, so you just let it go. But you know, you also would rather have the mind be an expression of yourself. That can, though, be a non-binding desire. And for some jnanis, it is a non-binding desire, and this is how my mind is. It's okay, I don't care. Doesn't mean they don't have knowledge. But for Swamiji, it wasn't okay. He worked really hard. No, I didn't want my mind, let my mind not be an expression of ajnanam. Let it not be an ignorant expression. Why not do that work, you know? And let the mind be a beautiful expression of myself. Such a beautiful thing. Om Purnamasa.
Te Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.